Welcome to Ballistic Radio. Join us as we discuss hard-won self-defense lessons, as well as the information you need to survive a violent encounter. Listen as armed professionals, industry experts, national champions, and gunfight survivors answer all your firearms and self-defense questions while exploring your rights and responsibilities as an armed citizen. Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Surefire, the professional's choice for suppressors and illumination tools. Surefire, America's beacon of freedom. And now, here's your host, John Johnston.
Welcome to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Surefire, the professional's choice for suppressors and illumination tools. Surefire, America's beacon of freedom. I'm your host, John Johnston. Remember, you can always listen to past shows at ballisticradio.com. Get the latest behind-the-scenes info, arguments, photos, videos, other things at facebook.com/ballisticradio. Coasting with me, Danger Pixie Actual, Melody Lauer.
Hello, I'm going to match your tone and your sing-songy. And what people shouldn't forget is that on the first Friday of every month is posted the Facebook user question photo that they can submit their questions to. That's a new change, though, relatively. On Facebook.
Yeah, I'd like to pick a different photo for that because the story behind that photo.
Amazing.
No, and how much I dislike that photo for the optic.
Sensitive.
Yeah, that's me. So
it's a good picture. Anyway.
Hey, guess what?
Wait, what?
What? What? This segment brought to you by Lucky Gunner and Federal Premium Ammunition. Whether there was a firefight or you do, in fact, want to worry about that little guy, you need more ammo. And when it's time to restock, you can't beat Federal Premium Ammunition at LuckyGunner.com. With a shipping department that's always moving at 88 miles per hour, if I order a case of American Eagle from Lucky Gunner on a Thursday, it's at my doorstep ready to shoot before the weekend starts. Head to LuckyGunner.com today to check out their in-stock lineup of Federal Premium Ammunition. And remember, unless you're on fire or drowning, you can never have too much ammo. So, I thought you were doing something that you weren't doing. I apologize for the gesture that I made at you while reading
you should apologize for the gesture that you made, you inappropriate man. Anyway.
Now I'm just making it. I'm making it for no reason
No, I started looking around because suddenly it got cold, and I'm like, I need my sweater.
So joining us, I want to call him Duberdoo Actual now. I think that should be his new name. Since Duberdoo Actual, Chase Jenkins.
I like Chase.
And the crowd goes wild.
Yeah, yay! Right? All right. I want to say it like Leroy. No, that's a different thing.
Every new video, I mean, now I've taken a class with Chase, so I've actually got to
experience
him as an instructor. But like every new video I see of Chase that Will puts up, I'm just like, I love Chase.
Yeah.
Chase is my people.
Well, so
I'd get in a lot of trouble hanging out with Chase.
Yeah. I would too. Not the last time I hung out with Chase, but there was that time in Georgia I hung out with Chase, and then I ended up getting pulled over. Though that was more of Jack Jack's fault.
Would I slide down a banister? Yes, I would.
Yeah. What we're saying here is you really need to follow Chase on Facebook because funny things get posted. But anyway, for those that don't know who you are, and since we've built you up as this this professional, this very serious professional person right now, who are you? What do you do? And we'll hop into today's subject.
Well, man, if we're building me up as a professional, we're fixing to let a lot of people down, right?
Yeah.
No, John. Look, man, nothing special, right? I just did LE for about 25 years. Actually, I just got back into LE. Got sworn a couple of weeks ago at a big sheriff's department here in Alabama. That has a real nice training facility, and they want to turn it into a go-to place in the state and the southeast region. So I set the position with them and going to try to help them out and turn that into what they want it to be. And also the primary job I have right now is running my business, Talon Defense, and I do that full-time. So that's just about what's got my time occupied for the last couple of years.
So I guess we're going to talk about low light. I think that's what we're talking about. I don't know. I don't make the decisions anymore. It's awesome. Because literally the conversation was 2 minutes ago, who's next? What are we talking about? Melody just told me, and I'm like, oh, cool. I like Chase.
This is what happens when you stage coups. Yeah. You get to make decisions. Yeah. So guess what? We're talking to Chase Jenkins. We're talking about Low Light. And go.
Yeah, so I guess my first question is, what do you think the... what do you think the biggest misconception is for people when they start talking about low light issues?
Well, there's a couple. I think that folks that's never been exposed to it, sometimes what you'll hear from that crew is, hey, man, I can shoot during the day, so if I get into something at night, I'll just turn the light off, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's probably one of the bigger misconceptions for the crew that maybe don't have much training experience, at all behind them. I think the other side of that coin is just the opposite, where we have a crew that buys into just being way too fancy with the light, right? We overcomplicate what we do with that flashlight as far as when we're working it on the flat range and building up our skills. There's just the misconception of, hey, man, how to use the light, how to operate it, what we do with it, some of the fancy stuff that we're doing, turning it off and on, how many options we want on that light, I think is the other side of the crew. So you have one crew that just really has no knowledge which to gauge working in low light stuff, and then you have the other crew that's had maybe just a little bit of exposure to it, and just overcomplicate it way too much.
Right. Right. Well, it seems like, too, that... Let me ask you your thoughts on this. It seems like a lot of people will take stuff that is appropriate in one sort of environment, so like a mill environment, right? Then try and transfer it over to an LE or civilian environment or vice versa. What are your thoughts on that? I mean, is there stuff that makes sense in a mill environment that maybe doesn't make sense for a private citizen, but goes back to maybe making a little sense for a cop? I mean, you know what I mean?
Sure. I think the way, the environment, the way people apply those lights in a setting, say, in the mountains of Afghanistan or something like that, might not necessarily be the way that we want to appropriately use that light, here in an urban setting or a rural setting or something of that nature. It's context, and I do think a lot of folks are guilty with jumping lanes as far as, hey, this is how I use the light, with my experience and background, and it's the way you should use the light, and maybe we just don't understand each other's context. So on my end, I try to stay in my lane with that, speaking primarily to just the law enforcement crew and the civilian setting.
Right. Well, how do you think we get people to understand that maybe there's more than one set of rules? You know what I mean?
Yeah, exposure, man. To me, that's the biggest thing. Getting a big frame of reference, going to all the training and classes I can, or garnering all the knowledge that I can and opening that frame of reference up, and that gives me, then I can kind of use that knowledge appropriately across a wide spectrum of things. That was what opened my eyes to everything, John. The, shooting tactics, low light, you name it, the more experience I could get, the more tutelage I could get under guys that knew what they were doing, that's when everything kind of started making sense to me. I think the more knowledge you gather like that, the easier it is for you to make your own decisions as to, hey, man, this might not be applicable to, what I do, my life, where I work, than maybe just looking at it with no frame of reference or a real small frame of reference. And then I think that kind of, that's the issue where we just start getting into things and doing things because they look cool, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I just take one low light class. I go to that. Maybe it's somebody who has used that light in a whole different environment and context than I'll be using it. But, hey, man, it looked cool, so I buy into it, and, you know, I start drinking that Kool-Aid.
Right.
Yeah. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah, I have a kind of a question. So you were the first low light, actual officially low light class that I ever went to, and I mean I thought it was great, you know, a sample size of one. But
well, let me hold that thought. I'm sorry, because we gotta go to break. We're talking with Chase Jenkins from Talon Defense. You're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Surefire, the professional's choice for suppressors and illumination tools. Surefire, America's beacon of freedom. This segment brought to you by Wilson Combat. Wilson Combat, makers of the finest custom 1911s and scatterguns since 1977, a legacy of quality, innovation, and service. Learn more about their firearms and accessories, as well as the new EDC X9, which offers discriminating shooters, 1911 match-grade accuracy, superior ergonomics and concealability with modern service pistol capacity and reliability at www.wilsoncombat.com. So, before the break, Melody was talking to Chase about her first experience in the dark.
Oh, wow. That didn't sound very great at all.
That sounded exactly how I wanted it to sound.
No, what I found was really interesting about going through that class was how many scenarios that we as even, I mean, the class I went through is kind of LEO focused, but I was trying to extrapolate more for my own context, which is civilian. But how many situations that we as civilians can find ourselves in the middle of the day being in compromised, like low light situations, and kind of, can you go over what those are? Like how civilians or whoever can find themselves in low light situations during daylight hours.
Right. Now, here's the thing, you know, the first thing that you need is you got to have a light on you, right? It's just like a gun. It's just like anything else. It was kind of like a pocket knife when I started carrying a light every day. You know, after a couple of weeks, you're like, man, how did I ever get by without having this thing on? And that's kind of the same way I apply a pocket knife. It's kind of like, hey, man, you know, I'm not ever going to use a pocket knife. You carry one every day for a couple of weeks. You're like, man, how did I ever get by without this thing? So I look at it the same way. But here's the deal, right? Anytime we go into enclosures, structures, anything of that nature, you know, we're going to have a light, even if it's during the day, high noon outside. So, there's all kind of things you could get into as far as power going out. Man, as I'm getting older, it helps me read, right? I mean, there's sometimes, even though I'm inside the house, whatever, my eyes are getting old, I have to have the flashlight to read and, you know, just kind of open the words up there so they don't look like this, like one big old black line, or whatever it is I'm trying to figure out. But, I think that, you know, once you have one, and you start using it, you know, more or less every day, it's going to be an administrative type function, but you'll start to use it more and more, right? As far as applying that in a self-defense type situation, I think, one, a light like that you can kind of curl up in your hand aids in any type of self-defense and striking techniques that we might do. You know, it's a little bit of extra weight that will lend itself well to your side of the argument, you know, if you have to use it. So there is a few, you know, niche places there that it could come in to the self-defense role, even without the light. During the day, too, you can always use it, again, hopefully some type of distraction technique if you have to use the light. In that fashion, it might buy you, you know, a moment or two of distraction there. But to me, it's a useful tool all the way around. So, I use it probably just as much during the day throughout my career as well as I did at night, especially when you get on the inside of enclosures. Man, you're walking around in the daytime, you enter an enclosure, even if maybe the power's working somewhat or it's lit up from the outside, with the eyes kind of, working to the different lighting environment, a lot of times just having that light to turn it on will aid you being able to see. So, I mean, it's one of those things that once you start using it, the applications are, they're numerous. And I don't think it's one of those deals where just because you're walking around during the day or you're not going to be out at night that you won't get any usefulness out of it.
Yeah.
Once you start using it, you'll use it a lot.
The one of the really big demonstrations that you did during the class was that backlighting. You know, you got someone who's standing in a doorway or something, and even if you're reasonably well lit, if there's a significant amount of light behind them, their actions and what's in their hands may be masked, and you've got a lot of light around you, but it's just the right lighting conditions where you might not be getting all the information that you should have about what they're doing and what they have. That was really a powerful demonstration.
Yeah, we always try to do that just so people will see. You know, you take a body and stand them in front of a window or a doorway like that, and it's just a shadowing. You know, that even if your light, even if your eyes are, you know, you've been inside for a long time, so the eyes are acclimated to that environment. Somebody steps into a well-lit area and they're backlit. The shadowing, you can't really see what they got in their hands. That's another thing that even though it might be high noon outside and well lit inside, you know, we might still need that light to identify exactly what they got in their hands. So there's a lot of phenomena out there like that and examples that we kind of use in classes just to show people, hey, man, you know, again, just because it's daylight outside and it's, you know, fairly well lit inside where you're at, you might still have to have that light to get 100% of the correct information that you're looking for.
So, let me. This seems to be a popular, I don't know, popular topic of conversation. How much light do you want a light to put out if a light could put out light?
I want it all. You know, we talk about this in class too. We brought it up, and it's one of those places I think too where we really, you know, we overcomplicate things. Man, I want the light to be as bright as possible. I want all the light I can get. You know, if there's a 1,000 lumen light out there, that's what I want in my hand. You know, the misconceptions, and it's the ones we always hear is, you know, like, hey, man, that much light, it'll splash back, it'll blind you. You know, if you put it on walls and stuff, it'll blind you. It'll cause, you know, you won't be able to see good. And you know, one, my thing is why are you turning the light on and pointing it at the wall and just staring at it? You know, that's the first thing. But we saw in those classes too, John, that one, like the daytime environment that we're talking about working in, I need a light powerful enough to push through the existing light. I don't remember if we did that demonstration in the class you come to where we go out in the parking lot under like a street light. We put one person on the outskirt of that street light and the other guy on the other side of it, and we, you know, see if our light will actually is powerful enough to burn through that,
mm-hmm.
That ambient lighting and existing lighting. There is all, to me, we can talk about the reason that we need the most powerful light we can get all day long, and there's just no justification for having a dimmer one. A few things that we, you know, picked up over the years after a low-light class, I've never had anybody come up to me, even the guys that might have had this preconceived notion in the beginning, and say, you know what, man, my light's just too bright. I want to trade it in for a dimmer light. So... There's, I think, just a little bit of application, and you'll see, yeah, if there's a 1,000 lumen light, that's what I want. If there's 1,500, that's what I want. You know, if there's 2,000, that's what I want.
And it's funny because, you know, the big argument is, you know, well, a lot of times these classes are in dark warehouses and stuff. You get a brightly lit hallway or something, that's just going to be too bright. So, you know, after our class, I went home, and I've got the 1,200. And then I have the 1,000 lumen weapon mount light too, and went into my very, very white hallway upstairs and hit the light. And not only was it not too much, it was fantastic because it was really like I just turned the lights on. The hallway was completely clear. I could see everything. And I'm like, this is, I don't want to go to a lesser light than this. And this was, it was certainly not too much. And it was the dead of night. It was awesome.
Well, and yeah.
I'm excited about low light now.
I'm glad. So, good job, Chase. You did it. We got about a minute and 40 seconds left in this segment, and then we'll pop back into it next one. But what's the biggest, like, oh, crap moment that you see students have when they get into the low light?
Well, probably not having enough light.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when we start trying to solve the problems, and work the angles, work multiple rooms, deep hallways and stuff. They just don't have enough light, or we get distance on the range away from the target, because there's not enough light. So they show up with a light that they think is going to get them through. Maybe it's gotten them through for the last, you know, several years, and it's not real bright, and they think, hey, I can make do with this. And usually within about an hour of the class, they're like, hey, man, I don't have enough light.
Yeah. Hey, now you missed a perfect opportunity here to be like, hey, man, you got any more of them lumens? I mean, that's what you should have done.
Scratching my neck.
Yeah, you'd pull that off pretty good. Anyway, I was gonna make fun of your drawl, but that'd be mean.
Wait, you mean he's got a drawl?
Yeah, he's got a little. What?
Any more of them Southern accents?
Yeah. Well, I can do one, but then I think that would be me appropriating your culture. So, and I don't want to do that because that's apparently wrong these days.
Yeah, anyway. Man, we don't want to tick anybody in the South off, right?
No, that went really poorly the last time that happened. But anyway, we're talking with Chase Jenkins from Talon Defense. You're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Surefire, the professional's choice for suppressors and illumination tools. Surefire, America's beacon of freedom. This segment also brought to you by Surefire. Know your target and what is beyond it. But how can you really know your target? By shining a really bright light on it, and that's where Surefire comes in. From the new 1200-lumen EDCL2T handheld or 500-lumen EDCL1T handheld to the 1000-lumen XH35 or 1500-lumen M600DF Scout Light, Surefire can make sure you never have to yell Aziz Light ever again. Surefire, the professional's choice for suppressors and illumination tools. And remember, as a special offer to Ballistic Radio listeners, you can get 20% off everything at the Surefire.com web store by entering the discount code Aziz Light. That is AZIZLIGHT, no space. So we're talking with Chase Jenkins from the South and discussing the lumens and the low light and the stuff like that. Let me ask you this. This is kind of something I've seen when I've been at other low light classes or helped Will out with stuff or just whatever. A lot of people, when they start using a handheld light or weapon mounted light, they do a couple things. One, they're like, well, I'm just going to use this or I'm just going to use that. And they don't really let them play together very well. And two, especially with the handhelds, it's like that thing is fixed in space and they are never moving it at all. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, that's, one, who's Will?
He's your girlfriend's son.
Never heard of her. No, okay, so here's the thing, right? And Will and I agree on a whole lot of stuff when it comes to low light. So here's the deal. Generally what we see, I want to give guys about four techniques that will help them lead with that light, put the light where it needs to go, in a simplistic fashion. So we teach an ice pick grip, right? So we're holding the light kind of like we're fixing to stab somebody with an ice pick. That's going to allow us to flow into and out of four positions. We work with the Harry's technique, the reverse Harry's technique, a facer temple index technique, and then an FBI or a wanding technique. All four of those, or those four, is going to let us put the light where we need it to go, when we need it to get there, and we're not going to have to switch grips or change the way we're holding that flashlight in any shape, form, or fashion. Because generally what you see under stress, right, if you look at the shooting videos we have, or if you just start stacking tasks and adding stress in the class, basically you're going to see that light stay in the grip that they start with, right? And we can get them kind of flowing from technique to technique, but they're not going to change the way in which they're holding that light. So to me, it just kind of keeps it simple, right? And we kind of hit on it at the beginning of the class, John, is just like, you know, been saying this for years, is we seriously overcomplicate working in low light environments. Same coin, you flip it over, and we seriously underestimate how complicated it is to work in low light environments. Right. Where we overcomplicate it is out on the flat range, learning how to work that handheld light in conjunction with the gun, right? That's where we try to get way too fancy with it, do way too many things with it, throw way too many options out there, and that's where we start overcomplicating it. Mm-hmm. Where we start causing a problem for the guy in class. Where we don't understand how complicated it is when you start applying that light to angles, right?
Really?
And trying to solve problems with it. So we think by teaching those four that we're not inundating them with the options and giving them too many to choose from. That's the one that you probably see is kind of the most comfortable. If you just hand somebody the light and tell them to shine it somewhere, that's usually the grip they acquire, right? So we try to work with that. Only teaching those four techniques, it'll let me lead with a light. You know, Harry's is going to let me lead left-hand corners. Reverse Harry's is going to let me lead with right-hand corners. That temple index or face index is going to let me work close quarter encounters, things of that nature. And that wanding is going to let me bend that light around object structures or danger areas without having to poke my head in there and see. So I think those four cover it all. And kind of like Will says in class, he's never seen anybody be holding the light. And when it jumps off, you know, switch around to a syringe technique or something like that where you've got to have a special kind of light. It's just like running the gun, right? I want a simple light. I don't want one of these that's set up for all these fancy grips and stuff like that where, you know, if I pick up another one, that's not the, I can't acquire the same grip or comfortable grip with it. So to me, keep it simple on the flat range. Keep it simple.
Well, and it seems like, too, that how do I want to? It's funny you kind of mentioned like where it gets complicated, where it gets simplified, and stuff like that. You were kind enough to let me observe at the class that I was at with you up on the catwalk in the structure that you had students working, and it was really interesting to see where people, for lack of a better term, put their light. I mean, and how. Yeah, and I'm not saying this is a negative to them, but just an observation, right? Like how sloppy they were with maximizing the light that they had to get light where they needed it and stuff like that. Do you see that a lot?
Yeah, you will. And it's just like anything else, right? I mean, as we start working those structures dry, they know there's not any threats in there. Just start, just working application of the light, and they tend to do a pretty good job, right?
Yeah.
When the stress goes on, maybe they know that there's a force on force encounter waiting in there. It's just like anything else, right? Everything wants to draw in, man. We start drawing that gun in close to the body. We start drawing that light in close to the body. And, we start to get sloppy with the techniques that causes a problem with shadowing on the light. Maybe we're not leading with it properly. So that's, not putting light where we need it to go or causing some shadows and some problems for us. But again, then it's just exposure, right? We have to burn those repetitions with it. So, we know, we figure out what works, what doesn't work. We're actually able to think through the problem. So it's like anything else, man. It just takes a lot of repetition and a lot of exposure, in which we don't get, right? Even in low light, we just left a pretty big department, working with Will last week, left a pretty big department there, busy tempo. And, all the guys was like, hey, we don't get low light training, right? Department wide. We're just not getting it. So just like anything else, we throw them out there, and expect them to just kind of learn on the fly. That's always less than ideal. And that'll get us through until it doesn't. Then we got problems. So I think across the board from the civilian side of things, working on a range that's, got a business license. In most jurisdictions, we have a curfew. So that curfew is usually 9 o'clock either way, right, or sundown. So that limits us being able to do any kind of low light classes on open enrollment range other than from about November till 1st of March when we have daylight savings time, right? So it gets dark about 5 o'clock. That'll give you a couple of hours to work. On the low light, on the LE side of the house, man, it's just like, listen, that's overtime to come out and work late. Maybe they have range restrictions as well. We can't, get the guys out, day shift guys, whatever, to work those odd hours to get low light training in. And the other time is maybe people don't understand it. They can't teach it that well other than what they've had at the academy. So we just avoid it altogether. Right. But, and, you know, here's the thing. It's like 80% of our shootings occur in low light, right? So it's, to me, that's probably where we need to be spending the majority of our time. But there's issues there that complicate being able to get it done. I can understand that. But, again, I think we just got to overcome those hurdles and make sure that we're spending an adequate amount of time on it. But there is issues with it. You know, and on the instructor end, too, you know, I'm getting old, dude. I'm in bed by about 9 o'clock every night. And I think last week, you know, maybe the average hour that we hit the bed was maybe 3 o'clock in the morning, you know, having to push through late. So everything's more aggravating running a low-light class, too, John. You probably know this. You know, I mean, man, everything's just a little bit more difficult, right? Herding the cats up, keeping everybody where they need to be, topping off magazines, stapling targets, you know, you can't see, so everything's just a little bit more difficult and aggravating. So
right.
I think all of that kind of makes a perfect brew of why it's not done as much as it needs to be done.
When I just discovered like a couple of things about you that you unintentionally let slip, and I'm going to just point them out to the listeners so that they are aware of it. One, what you just told me is you're the only person ever anywhere that likes daylight savings time. And I gotta reconcile that with our friendship, right? And then the other interesting thing, and I'm just gonna drop this on everybody, and then we'll be right at the break, so you won't get to defend yourself, which is how I have set this up. Is just the last week we hit the bed singular, we plural, you and Will hit the bed singular at about 3 a.m. So. I mean, I guess it's good that you and Will get along so well, and, you know, I mean, hey, I get lonely on the road, too. I generally just cuddle a pillow, but, you know, Will's a very attractive man, so I'm not going to hold this against you, Chase.
You stay away from me.
Wow.
Well, me and Will get along fine. He does exactly what I say, and everything, we get along great.
Well, there you go. But, hey, we're talking with Chase Jenkins from Talon Defense.
That's what I say.
Oh, and you're listening to Ballistic Radio. I'm so sorry, everyone. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Surefire, the professional's choice for suppressors and illumination tools. Surefire, America's beacon of freedom. So we're talking with Chase Jenkins, and I think Joe, the producer, should insert a little sound clip right about here.
Those aren't pillows.
Seamless transition. But anyway... Man, we got one segment left. Where do I want to go with this? Where do I want to go with this? How do you think we get people to go to the trouble of spending more time on the low light stuff?
Oh man, you know, that's a marketing deal, which I know nothing about. I'll tell you, here's the deal. You know, and we just had that last segment. We talked about it. I like low light classes.
Yeah.
I mean, I really do. I like to put them on. I like to go to them. So I don't know. You know, I think if we could just expose more people to it and get them over that mindset of, hey, man, I'll just turn the light on, or I don't go anywhere, you know, after it's dark or whatever. If we could just get over a bunch of those misconceptions, it's the same. I mean, I think the problems with it is the same thing as anything else, you know, in the training world is just, making people see the need.
Right.
Especially on the LE side, you know, it's just getting guys to see the need for it. So once I have the answer to that, man, I probably just have to worry about where I'm going to put all my money, right?
Yeah, right. get a big old vault and swim around in it like Scrooge McDuck. You know, that's what I'm planning on doing whenever I hit it big. So,
well, I think one of the other issues.
Oh, go ahead, Mel. My bad.
Oh, I was going to say, I think one of the things that's interesting is, you know, I've been carrying a weapon mounted light since taking your class. And I get people who kind of are like, yeah, but you're just a civilian. And I was like, yes, I am. And kind of addressing the application of weapon mounted lights for civilians versus others and kind of going from there. What do you think, Chase?
Well, I tell people this, and I frame it, even in the basic classes and stuff, where what we're just working during the day. If it's a light that you're using in the defense of yourself or anybody else, it needs a light on it. Because I've got to be able to unequivocally see in any altercation I get into in common sense, and you know, just looking at history shows that the majority of those incidents are going to take place in some type of diminished light setting. So, you know, and kind of trying to get into that a while ago, I want a light on the gun, but I also want a handheld. One does not negate the other, right? Now, if you give me just the choice of one, I'll take the handheld. But I think having one on the weapon is important. We got into that in the class. I think it's all like, especially post-engagement, right? Making sure I keep the problem I had illuminated, looking around to see if there's going to be any other problems or a better place to go to. We saw where those lights have to work together. I think, too, that might be one of the things that's kind of hurt low-light training over the years is, hey, we put a light on the gun now, so that makes it even more simple that if I need to see, I'll just turn this light on.
Yeah.
We talked about switchology in that class and how it's not as easy as it sounds. You start putting other things into the mix, you know, if it's single hand stuff, if you're trying to control a loved one or something like that, those lights a lot of times don't turn on that easy unless you've got the proper switchology on it. I think we talked about this in the class too. I think the one of the issues that we used to see that we had to actually set up a little scenario for to dispel this myth was guys always used to say, well, hey man, I've got the handheld light in my hand. If something happens, I'll just dump the handheld light and I'll go to the weapon mounted light. And what we did for a long time, of course it took a little time and it burnt some time, but I think it made a valid point is I would take a Sims gun and load it up, and I would give the other guy a Sims gun and load it up, give him a handheld light and tell him, okay, you illuminate me with that handheld light. And as soon as I make a move, then I want you to do what you do, right? If you want to dump the handheld light, go to the weapon mounted light, that's fine. But you need to understand, it's who gets who first, and I intend to burn you down, right? So we'd kind of go ahead and put that in their mind.
Yeah.
So what we would do is I'd make the move for that gun. They would ditch that handheld light. Now we're buffering the information, right? It's not coming in real time. Things are changing. We just can't see it. So I'd aggressively go for that gun and bring it up. As soon as I clear the holster with it, I would drop it. And of course, we're in the dark. They would bring that handgun up, turn that weapon mounted light on, and they would burn me down, right? So, the point was, if anytime I have somebody in the light, I want to keep them in there. That's getting my information in real time. Anytime I have somebody in the light and I lose them, now there's still stuff happening. I just can't see it, right? So now I'm going to be forced to solve a problem, where I haven't been able to get all of the equation to it. So, common sense would tell you there's a good probability I'm going to solve it incorrectly. So, I think that's another big myth that we have to dispel is just because I have the one on the gun, I won't need the handheld, or even vice versa. Just because I have a handheld, I won't need the weapon light. So, ideally, I want them both. If you make me choose, I'll take the handheld light any day.
Yeah. I mean, and, As listeners should be able to figure out, I'm sponsored by Surefire, right? So we make weapon-mounted lights. It's kind of my job to sell you weapon-mounted lights. But I agree with you completely. If if I had to pick between one or the other, the handheld would win every single day and Sunday. And the thing that I think weapon-mounted lights can be incredibly useful if you know what you're doing. And I think they can actually cause problems for you if you don't know what you're doing, mainly because, and I'd be curious to get your take on this, I see a lot of low or no trained individuals, when they get a weapon-mounted light, start pointing that gun at a lot of things that don't necessarily need a gun pointed at them. You know what I mean?
Exactly. Well, and here's the deal, John. We put the weapon mounted light on the gun. It becomes a part of the gun. It becomes part of the weapon system.
Mm-hmm.
Where we're justified in pointing that light at people is any engagement that we are now on the offensive. All right. So let's just take it to in a law enforcement setting. We're going to do a forced entry on this residence. We got a barricaded suspect. We got an arrest warrant, and intel knows that's the only guy in there.
Yeah.
So. We were justified now at pointing that gun, that light, at anything in that structure. All right, so sure. that would be a case where, hey, weapon-mounted light, you know, might get you through this encounter. But yeah, if you go back to about any other setting, you know, we talk about, hey, you get a burglar alarm at a church Sunday night, 9:30. You walk around, there's no signs of forced entry. You got a couple cars in the parking lot. So you enter that structure. You know, we're not going to be justified at pointing a light at everything in there. All right. So, when we're on the defensive like that, you've got to work with that handheld, right? We've got to justify pointing the gun, at anything, before we do it. So it's not like we can just search for that light and it's kind of like, oh, okay, that's the preacher leaving church late. My bad. Sorry. That's not how it works. Mm-hmm. So I think the handheld lets us get by. All of those issues. Here's the other thing too. Even if we're on the offensive, searching those structures and stuff like that on that arrest warrant we're talking about, we're still going to have to point that gun or put that gun or that light in places to see. And I might not necessarily want to point that thing in a crawl space in the attic, right? Just to poke it up there so I can see or, you know, poke that muzzle into a closet or something like that. So to me, I think the versatility of that handheld, is what we need. That weapon-mounted light, to me, it's got a real narrow lane that it travels now, right?
Yeah.
So, and the misconception is, hey, I've got a weapon-mounted light, so I'll just use that. I think that gets us into, and it has over my law enforcement career, especially when they first come out, right? There was, you know, it got guys into a lot of trouble till we kind of started to figure them out.
Right.
That, hey, it wasn't the answer to the dart, right? So, that's another, I think, big misconception when it comes to the class. You know, we work, I can't remember which class it was y'all come to. Did we work some carving techniques with the handheld light?
We didn't. We just did all handgun. But we only got about a minute left, so I got to cut you short. But if people want to come take your class, and they absolutely should, because I think you're one of the most underrated, best-kept secret instructors there is in the country right now.
I agree.
Where can they do that at?
TalonDefense.us.com.
Perfect. Well, Chase, brother, I always appreciate our time together, man. We've known each other, what, coming up on 5-6 years now?
Man, probably at least, yeah. It's been a while.
That's scary. Well, hey, be safe, man. I'm looking forward to seeing you. Don't know when it'll be, but I'm looking forward to it. And thanks for talking to us.
Mm-hmm. Oh, John Melody, I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Anytime I can help you, man, just give me a call.
Yep, definitely.
Thank you.
Hey, make sure you check out our website, ballisticradio.com, like our Facebook page at facebook.com/ballisticradio, and keep leaving those 5-star review on iTunes. We really appreciate it. Thanks for listening, everyone. As always, be safe. See you next week.